Hello, Internet. My name's Jonathan Cook.
And I'm Matt Noble.
And this week on the Screen Verdict podcast, we've got something a little bit different due to life getting in the way of television. We might be a little bit behind on a couple of shows, so what we're doing is an HBO catch-up.
Yes.
What shows are we going to be talking about, Matt?
Girls, Boardwalk Empire, and The Newsroom, if you've caught up on it. Have you caught up on The Newsroom?
Matt sent me a message about 8 hours ago asking if I had seen all of the season three of The Newsroom. I guess if I spent every one of those 8 hours, I could have caught up.
You would have got an hour off.
But instead, what we're going to be doing is just talking about Girls and Boardwalk Empire.
And how about this? In housekeeping, I'll give a story from the Newsroom Season 3 premiere party.
Oh, very nice.
Yeah.
So, despite life getting pretty busy, HBO always wins out in the end. We love a lot of their shows. Girls...
Except at the Emmys the past 5 years. When AMC and Showtime have won at the Emmys.
Girls, previously, I've been a little bit mixed on Girls going into season...
I've never been mixed on Girls. I've been very pro Girls.
Well, there's a time in every young man's life where he's just got to give the season of Girls a chance, and that's what we're going to be doing today. Easy way to break it down. Four girls on the show. We're going to go through each of the girls, say what they get up to, and I guess now's time to give a little bit of a spoiler alert.
Hello.
And we're back. We made it through the spoiler alert.
We're in the spoiler zone.
Hannah. What's Hannah up to? She goes to Iowa at the beginning of the season.
Yes, to go to college, wants to learn how to write. She got accepted into a pretty cool course, so she goes there to study writing, and she, I think, has a higher opinion of the contribution that she has to give to this class than maybe the rest of the class views her value.
Yeah, no one really seems to enjoy her work, and it is beyond Hannah's comprehension as to why she's not being praised as a gift to the rest of the writer's workshop, which in some scenes is kind of funny how delusional she is, and sometimes it's just plain silly.
Was the point of this Iowa storyline a bit to the degree of, like, look, Hannah has, like, built for herself this life in New York with people to just affirm this delusional view she has of herself, and you put her in any other environment and people, it's just going to look absurd?
I feel like she comes across as looking absurd in New York as well.
Yeah, that's fair.
I think Hannah is just one of those people that, I guess she doesn't know what she wants. I guess that person disagreed. They thought Hannah does know what she wants. Big girls, but big Hannah fan on Third
Someone
Street.
Someone standing out front, honk if you like girls.
I need Ray out there to run for Santa Monica Council, get the noise pollution down.
Yes.
I don't know. What does Hannah want? She wants Adam. She doesn't want Adam. She wants to be a writer. Then she gets the opportunity to be in this great writer's workshop, and she doesn't make the most of it. She decides she doesn't want to be a writer anymore.
Mm. Well, it's because she wasn't getting affirmed. Like, she does not survive in an environment where people aren't affirming the, like, best version she has of herself in her head.
Hmm. So that doesn't
care. Yeah, I'm trying to think of a real life like scenario where people are like this, but like I guess it's just self-involved people.
So she comes back to New York to find Adam is has a girl in their apartment. She's flabbergasted. She's devastated.
It's the girlfriend community. Britta. Right? Or does it just look like her?
Yeah, except she's playing more of a... What's she called? Annie? She's more of an Annie in this, in Girls.
Mm.
I think. I don't know. In this, she's kind of like... She's an intellectual. She gives talks. She's a lot more sort of put together and proper than Hannah. Although she turns out to be a little bit unusual as well. But I thought this was so strange that how offended Hannah was that Adam was seeing someone else. I was like, you left. You left to Iowa. You were the one that chose to leave. And it wasn't as though you said, well, let's pursue a long-distance relationship. You never spoke to him. You spoke to him once and then avoided him. This is months later. Like, what's he supposed to do? Just pine?
Wait for
pine
her.
After you for
yes.
A, yeah.
He is there to fulfill her needs and be her support person. Like that, in her worldview, that is his role. Because they've got this love for each other, so that he just needs to be there for her when he needs it, when she needs him.
I personally blame Ryan Gosling. First of all, he set the standard for sexiness just too high. The bar is just too high. But now that everybody's seen The Notebook, everybody expects you to wait to go crazy for year after year after year.
Yeah, no, like...
But Adam's no Ryan Gosling. He finds Mimi Rose, and their relationship's a bit of a sham, and it doesn't really work out. Which I felt kind of sorry for Adam for. I don't think he did wrong in either scenario. Then goes back to Hannah and then gets rejected there. So he basically takes all the brunt of all the fallout from these mixed up relationships.
I've got a question about this relationship. It's a bit of a tangent, I'm sorry. Next season, are we going to see, like, Hannah, like, hook up with Abed from Community? Like, was this Adam getting back at her for sleeping with Troy from Community? Are they going to be working through the study group?
yeah, I bet I'm putting my money on Jessa to take Chevy Chase.
I would love Hannah and Abed and just all, like, the references he would make to TV shows she probably doesn't even know exist. Like, Hannah doesn't seem like a big TV buff.
We'll see. Well, we might have to form a checklist, a little game for you to play at home. See, count how many community members girls' characters can hook up with.
Mm. Yeah. Boy. So she comes back to the college. Adam's seeing this other chick. Is there anything else big for the Hannah storyline this season?
Well, she finds out that her dad is gay.
Mm.
Which is, what I guess would be a little surprising. I mean, that's fine if that's who you are, but you've known your dad to be a certain way for so long, and that would be, I guess, just really surprising. And Hannah surprisingly takes it quite well. Hannah, prone to meltdowns and overreactions and so forth, is actually quite a good emotional support to her parents.
Here's the problem. She views herself as a very progressive, accepting, modern woman. So, like, I think she's just so concerned about... The most thing she's concerned about here is coming across as homophobic.
How she looks.
Yeah, I think... That is, like, her primary concern here is, and like, any, like, problem she's got with it, she has to rationalize as a non-homophobic response.
The only thing that really came of this, which I think could be potentially entertaining, is Elijah's relationship with Hannah's dad. Because Elijah's was a real saving grace for the season. In what I thought, particularly in the beginning, was a very dull season. Elijah brought a lot of entertainment. I used to find him a bit annoying, but now that they've just kind of found this really good spot where he can be that kind of sassy, over-the-top, crude, but it's kind of... But he's witty as well, and you just kind of like how catty he is. And his one-liners are pretty good. So him going out with Hannah's dad and introducing him to the life of being a single gay man out in New York actually sounds quite entertaining to me.
If you, someone close to you had just come out as gay, would you be like sort of thinking, Jonah is the influence I want on this person's life?
If by Jonah you mean Elijah, then no. That's actually a very good point. As entertaining as that might be to watch, he's probably not really the role model you want for your dad who recently came out.
This is the way I want my dad approaching the world now. I want him to have getting my biblical figures mixed up. Or HBO characters. I think a question, though an unsurprisingly questionable choice from Hannah.
I think I'd want Stephen Fry. I'd see if he was available and say he's probably a better introduction into the lifestyle than Elijah.
Mm. Yes. Great. Is that all the Hannah stuff?
Sure.
Okay, good. Because I've got to go to a hairdressing appointment in 15 minutes. But I told you that was the reason. Or I just set an appointment.
Just because you tell me you've got your priorities wrong doesn't mean your priorities aren't wrong.
Yeah. My hair is very important. So that's your gold standard fake excuse. Like, that, the hairdresser's a point. It is a literal... I will get a photo... Oh, no, I can't be able to get a photo of the hairdressers. Anyway, move on to... who do you want to move on to? Marnie? Jessa?
Marnie. Okay, so Marnie... she joins... What's his name? Desi? In this sort of folk group. And he actually has a girlfriend, but they're seeing each other, which is really scumbaggy. Then he decides to leave her and for Marnie, and he was just very weak the whole time. He was so douchey, sort of playing both sides emotionally, and he's just so full of it. I mean, he's kind of a good character because you just want to smack him in the face, which I think is what they're going for.
Girls is good at characters like.
And yeah, it's just mind blowing what Marnie sees in Desi. But they do actually start a relationship, and yeah, just as then their music starts to look like it might take off, they start having problems. Then as soon as they have problems, Desi decides to propose. The whole thing's a sham. The only reason why this relationship was worth having in the show is because it led to the scene with Ray and Desi in the coffee shop, where Ray just lights him up. He rips him 10 new ones, telling him why he can't stand him as a human being. And that was the reward. I didn't get to physically slap Desi myself, but that felt just as good.
Okay, here is my problem with that speech from Ray. Like, his governing argument is that Marnie doesn't, like, you don't deserve a girl like Marnie. Do you agree with that premise?
Well, I think that Desi doesn't deserve the girl that Ray thinks Marnie is, Whether Marnie or not actually is the Marnie in Ray's mind is another question, but I think he does deserve it based on Ray's paradigm.
Okay, Ray knows what we know, though, about Marnie. It's not like we as the audience have this, like, sort of like, Ray has no idea what Marnie's getting. He pretty much knows everything we do. And it's not like, put aside what you think about Marnie and past seasons or whatever, she entered a relationship with a guy who was in a relationship. He then left her for him, left her for the other girl, then got back together with her very soon after things sort of went south. And, like, she knows what she signed. She knows this guy's a douchebag. Like, she has entered, very willingly entered this relationship with him on numerous occasions, knowing exactly what she's buying. Like, does the guy who buys a car, and I'm not trying to compare a relationship, oh, who cares about the disclaimer, does the guy who buys a car, a really bad car, who knows it's a really bad car, does he deserve a better car?
That hasn't entirely been explained in the show, what qualities in Marnie Ray sees. I think...
I see a few.
I mean, I think perhaps underneath it all, she is actually quite intelligent and quite talented and quite, you know, caring in things, but she's just so, everything about her is just so surface level. She just is all about appearances, just caring what other people think. And sometimes I just don't know what she's doing with her. The way she was with Charlie, was she with Desi, even hooking up with Ray, who is the boyfriend, ex-boyfriend of one of her best friends, was very morally questionable because she didn't check it was okay with Shoshana first.
She's fairly insecure, which isn't a good thing, but it does kick into gear the white knight syndrome. Like, it's she's so struggling with the world, and she's so out of her depth, I can be the one to pull her out. She wasn't as attractive as she was, she'd be in trouble. like, her attractiveness also, like, the guys who want to help her out might not want to help her out if she wasn't attractive too. I think, like, you need the helpless, insecure, like, struggling with life and attractiveness. And when those two things overlap, I think it awakens in a lot of guys the, I've got to save this person. I want to be the knight to save this princess. And I wonder if with Ray, that's a bit of what's at play here.
Well, I feel like those feelings, that goal might be a little bit better directed towards Shoshana. I feel like she's perhaps a more savable case. Which I guess brings us to Shoshana, who, I guess for the first few episodes, is just trying to find a job. That's her storyline for the season. She goes to these interviews. I guess she got decent grades. I know she has a college degree. She's kind of likable, a bit goofy, a bit over-energetic, but no one seems to be liking it. And then probably the worst interview of all, it completely bombs so high, she ends up yelling at the guy, doesn't get her a job, but does get her a boyfriend.
Yeah.
Now, I thought this was kind of cute, like I kind of liked the guy, but we just got introduced to him this season, and I'm not really invested in him, whereas Ray, I think, is probably the best character on the show, and I would kind of like those two to end up together, but I guess they already had their chance and it didn't work. It's kind of hard for them to repair the fact that Shoshana, who was one of my favorite characters, cheated on Ray. She sort of redeemed... It's not so much she redeemed herself, it's just kind of been long enough for me to, like, not be as angry about that anymore.
And enough characters have done enough other annoying things in the meantime as well.
And I get
like, there's been there's been more things for me to get mad at in Girls since the since Shoshana's indiscretion.
And Ray likes Marnie now, so maybe that's a long shot. Maybe that's not going to happen for me. I did like it where she was going to take the job in Tokyo. That was kind of a funny scene where she gets that opportunity, and the guy says, "No, don't go. Stay and be my boyfriend." Because Girls is the kind of show where people say so many unnecessary things and then don't say the things they should say. Whereas this guy finally just took a chance. He was just like, "I'm going to be up front. I know we don't know each other that well yet, but I really like you and I want you to stay and be my girlfriend."
Gotta respect that.
Yeah. I don't even know his name, but good on you, guy.
Good on you, buddy. having a go. Jessa, did she get up to anything? I could honestly not tell you. Oh, she wanted to go out with the girl. She set up with Adam's boyfriend, and that's why she set up Adam and the girl. And then that guy ended up being like, he was just using the... I don't know. That was pretty...
It was as convoluted as you made it sound out to be. Yes, she
was... the guy from Heroes. Was it the guy from Heroes?
Yeah. She wants to go out with this guy, Ace, who's pretty douchey. He's a pretty funny character, I suppose. And but he still has a thing with Mimi Rose. So she sets Adam up with Mimi Rose so she can try and get Ace. But then it turns out, basically, screws over herself and Adam because Mimi Rose and Ace end up having a thing. Well, I think Mimi Rose ends up choosing nobody. Nobody ends up happy, basically, which is usually the result of any scheme plotted by Jessa. But at least she thought Mimi Rose might be somewhat of a good match for Adam, which they were for a little while, and her liking Ace, even though he's bizarre, there's nothing wrong with that. So this was probably one of the less evil schemes Jessa has had throughout the show.
Yeah. So, season ends. They have Adam's sister has a baby. Adam and Hannah go together. He wants to get back to with her and she doesn't, right? Is that it?
Yeah.
And she'll undoubtedly change her mind next season. So, verdict?
Verdict.
Do you want to talk about Boardwalk for a couple minutes first?
Okay. Well,
Boardwalk, it ended. It finished.
The final season. We've got about
7 minutes, Jonathan. What do you want to talk about with Boardwalk?
Oh, my goodness. So, Boardwalk, probably my favorite drama that was still airing going into the season. Was a little bit crushed with the way season four ended. But I still had high hopes. That they know it's the final season, 8 episodes. They're gonna do a Breaking Bad. They're gonna wrap it up well, and they blew my mind with the first few episodes. All of a sudden, they start having these flashbacks and things, and it's like they completely changed the style of the show. And I was like, "Ooh, this is risky, changing the style of the show in the last season." And the first couple of episodes were alright. I think episode 2 or 3 was pretty slow. But man, it picks up speed so quick. It's like being on the top of a hill and you start pushing that ball and it rolls and it doesn't really roll very quickly. But then once it gets, it's just gone. It's just out of control. We had so many major characters confront each other, die, people disappear. Oh, I don't even know where to begin. Who dies? They killed Joe Masseria in episode 1. Van Alden. So, Van Alden, one of the greatest characters in the show, the policeman, who ends up working for Al Capone, is forced into this position to work for the FBI, and they get caught stealing money, and so he decides to confront Al Capone, and it was this great sort of circle where he's gone from sort of like the cop to being the bad guy, and then he embraces the role of the cop again, and he's like, "I am Agent Van Alden, and I am here to arrest you for all this, that, and the other." And unfortunately, the FBI agent kills him in order to keep his cover, which was pretty brutal. But it was a fantastic scene. I was on the edge of my seat the whole way throughout.
Is that the move if you're sort of like, you just claim you're a mole? Like, obviously it wasn't for Ben Alden, but like, do you just sort of like, oh, this isn't going well? Oh yeah, I was the police the whole time. I was just about to write up all this tonight when I got back.
I mean, it didn't really play out too well, but it was, I guess it was sort of, it was pretty cathartic for Van Alden, and it was something you felt that he deserved in a way.
Mm. Yeah, no, I agree.
Chalky White, Omar from The Wire, he had a pretty miserable story. His daughter ends up getting accidentally shot by one of our favorite characters, Richard Harrow, who then kills himself because of it. And then Chalky gets sent to work on a chain gang, but he makes an escape. And then has to kill his accomplice. And then he could walk away from it all, but the jazz singer that he's in love with, he goes back to set free from, what's his name? The guy from the Hunger Games. And he ends up getting mowed down in the back alley because of his love for the girl, but you know, to him it was worth it. He knew what was coming. He just said, you know, so this is how it's going to end. And then he closes his eyes, and the last thing he hears, the thing that was able to get him through his time on the chain gang, and I guess the thing that was able to get him through death, was the sound of the voice of the woman he loved.
Mm.
So yes. That was pretty heart-wrenching stuff.
Yes. I think I was a bit less invested in the characters than you.
You're like, oh, so, yep, they killed that guy as well. Okay.
Yeah.
Who are some of the other characters? I have so many things to wrap up.
We've got 3 minutes.
Well, I guess we'll skip to Nucky. I'm sure there's some other interesting things that went along the way. But Nucky is the main character, Steve Buscemi. We followed him for 5 seasons. And, you know, whenever we watch these sort of crime shows, there's this kind of up and down of, you know, they're a good person, are they a bad person? Are we now just accepting them as a bad person? And that's sort of okay because we're just liking them playing that role. You know, Nucky to me has sort of crossed the line to doing bad things, but bad things that were always in some ways somewhat justifiable. And he was always doing things for other people as well that showed, you know, he wasn't primarily about the money and greed and bloodlust and that sort of thing. And in the final season, we get these flashbacks of how he became to how he got the position that he does, and him working for the Commodore with Jimmy's mum, and the whole time thinking, oh, you know, where are they going with this? How is he? What's he going to do? And in the final episode, it's revealed that, because we had already known that Jillian was under the care or was working for the Commodore, and he slept with her when she was only 12, and that was when she gave birth to Jimmy, and that's why people thought they were brother and sister, because they were so close in age. She was so young when they had him, so that was such a terrible thing to have happen to her. And this whole time, you know, that Jillian's in the mental hospital now, and she's writing to to Nucky, you're thinking, how did he help her? You know, in what way was he a support? In what way is he there for her? Because, you know, they must be close because he went on to be sort of a mentor for Jimmy. And, you know, that panned out in a pretty heart-wrenching way as well when he killed Jimmy, when he felt Jimmy betrayed him. But, you know, how was he so close to Jillian? And in the final episode, it's revealed that you know, he failed to live up to the expectations of the Commodore, and he wasn't going to get that position. He wasn't going to be able to make them enough money to provide for his wife and family. And in order to win the favor of the Commodore, he brings Jillian to him with the knowledge that he is going to abuse her, which is just one of the most disgusting, upsetting, troubling things to realize. It was just such a flip, because for five whole seasons, you've been trying to justify all the bad things that Naki has done and convince yourself that it's okay to root for him because he's not a bad guy. And in the final episode, it's revealed that he got everything that he has, all of his success, is from doing one of the most abominable things that you could do. I felt terrible. And the character that we've been introduced to that looked scarily like Jimmy. It was amazing. The casting for this season was incredible for the flashbacks. The girl looked exactly like Jillian. The guy looked exactly like Naki. And this
they found some like 8-year-old Steve Buscemi. Like, Commodore. I'm just going to the beach today to swim for quarters.
And so this boy that looks exactly like Jimmy is revealed to be Tommy, who was his son and was actually ended up being raised by Jillian. And while he was with Jillian, Jillian must have told him that she thinks he killed Jimmy, and he was the one that gave her to the Commodore. And you know, Naki actually tries to help him, but you know, even when you know he's causing trouble, he tries to buy him off, and that was what Nucky's incentive was at the beginning. You know, the season starts with him chasing a coin in the ocean as a kid, and then he did this terrible thing in order to make money from the Commodore. And even now, you know, money is just the answer to all his problems. He tries, even after the kid rips up, you know, the money, $50 or whatever, he tries to buy him off with more money. And, you know, that's not what he's there for. He's there for revenge. And the final scene of the show is him telling him who he is, and he guns down Naki in the street, which was not pleasant. It wasn't what you think. Oh, yeah, this is how I want the show to end. But having learnt what you just learnt, it just made so much sense. I don't think there was any other way the story could have ended.
And it comes sort of full circle with the Jimmy, with the Naki killing Jimmy for his son to then kill Naki in the final. Like, that's pretty good. I feel like it would have meant more to me if I'd seen season 2 of Boardwalk Empire. I feel like that was the season which introduced a lot of this Naki, Jimmy, Jillian sort of dynamics.
Definitely.
So I feel like I was like, okay. Like, and so you got the flashbacks all the way through the season, and you're sort of going, oh, this is all going to come together deliciously in the final. This is all building to something. And I sort of feel like we wasted a lot of time in the flashbacks. So we're like all these little things, but like it was a very slow burn to something that you needed to see season 2 to fully appreciate. But I'm not blaming them. It's partly my fault that I haven't seen season 2. But no, it is nice how it comes full circle with the whole Jimmy thing there. Should we give each show now a verdict? Girls versus Boardwalk.
Sure. Let's start with Girls. I think I've always been very mixed on Girls. It's ranged from loving episodes to hating episodes, just being completely indifferent about episodes. I feel like this season I probably was indifferent to a lot of it. I think maybe I've just gotten used to the annoying aspects of the show. I just have to accept that people are going to do ridiculous things that make no sense to me, and that's just a part of the show. It was relatively watchable with at least some funny parts, mainly in due probably to Ray. I liked him running for council and things like that. But overall, just not a big fan. I'm going to give it a 4 out of 10.
I give Girls about a 4 out of 10 too. Not the worst season, but I'm still not loving it.
Boardwalk Empire. Matt, what are your thoughts? Okay.
I'll tell you this, I'm just going to now start going to the car and getting ready to go to the hairdressers. So if you hear, like, some background noise and things, that's what that is. So we'll just apologies to the listeners. So, Boardwalk, yeah, it was pretty slow. I'll be honest, I was pretty bored and distracted for most of it. But I think there was some really nice stuff there, and that's the thing with Boardwalk. Like, it's a show that I never, like, particularly connected with. I think in season 3 I got into it quite a bit. But I always appreciated the good things in it. Like, this is a great cast. This is great production. This is good direction. These are interesting scripts with rich themes. So, you know, it wasn't my favourite season of Walk. I didn't love it. But that all being said, I'd give it a 6 out of 10. I think it's pretty good.
So Boardwalk Empire, it's over. It's my final chance to review it. Oh,
sorry, there's the radio in the car.
We need some dance music to review it.
yeah.
And, you know, as you said, I think Boardwalk is always comes through with the acting, the writing, the direction, the costumes, the sets, all of that's great. But what really sets Boardwalk apart from other shows for me is for it to make an emotional connection. And even if it's things that aren't nice, things that are hard to watch or to deal with emotionally, it makes me care and it makes me think and it has an impact. And I think this is one of the most powerful shows that I've watched, and artistically I think it's just masterful. I think there are very, very few series that are able to accomplish what Boardwalk has accomplished. So I'm going to give season 5 a 9.5 out of 10.
Oh boy, okay, so let me just do the math to see which show wins. We've got Girls on an 8, total score of 8, and we've got Boardwalk on a total score of, 9 plus 6, it's 15 and a half. So Boardwalk Empire wins. I would have given the Newsroom final season an 8. So, like, I guess if you double that, then maybe that wins. Is that... Because the Newsroom final season, I thought, was very good. Yeah, the seven episodes was a lot tighter. They focused on more of the things we liked, less of the things we didn't. There's even a scene at the end where Jeff Daniels whips out the guitar and plays a bit of a song on guitar and everyone sort of joins him for a bit of a song. So, I don't know. So Newsroom wins or Boardwalk wins? What's the official official ruling there?
I think we might have to. I think we might have to declare Boardwalk the winner of the head to head. Maybe in housekeeping we'll update you with a or in another podcast we'll update you with the how Newsroom fares in a free for all.
Well, look, and I did promise I'd say a story from the Newsroom party I was at, the premiere party from when I was in LA late last year, and I guess I'll just tell that now. It's not a particularly interesting story, so you can turn off the podcast now, I guess, but you don't have to. So I went to this Newsroom party, and people know I'm a big fan of the West Wing, Jonathan, so I went to watch the first episode. They screened the first episode. I get there, and on the seats are, like, signs, like, Mr. Sorkin's seat and Mr. Daniels' seat, and they all had, like, a row full of guests for each of them. Olivia Munn had her own row, like, with just their names stuck on the seat. I'm like, oh, man, those people are going to be sitting in those seats. It's got their names literally on the seats. And then it was hard to find ours. So, like, there was no Matt Noble seat. Like, so we went, oh, where are we meant to sit? And they're like, oh, just on any of the ones that don't have someone's name on the logo. So we then went and sat there. So we were sitting very sort of like far left front of the sort of cinema, the DGA screening room. But that was actually out pretty good because Aaron Sorkin introduced it. And that meant he was introducing it right in front of us. He was literally like 2 meters from us, creator of the West Wing and Newsroom. And then, so we then watched the episode. It was great. I like, during the episode, you could turn around and watch Jeff Daniels watching the Newsroom or watch Aaron Sorkin watching the Newsroom.
That would be great if in that scene, Jeff Daniels' character is watching like an episode of his new show. And then you could watch Jeff Daniels watching Jeff Daniels watching Jeff Daniels. It would be Jeffception.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, my gosh. That would have been epic. So then afterwards, there are obviously drinks and plenty of food. You know, it's a party. That's how they do it in Hollywood. Drinks and food at the parties. It's pretty fancy. There's even a chandelier, I think, in the mix. So then we'll go around.
Sia wasn't allowed.
Yes. No. That girl in the music video was, though, because she doesn't know how to swing from one. So we were there, and Tom, my boss, introduced me to to Aaron Sorkin, and I got to meet my hero. We got to explain that I wouldn't have been working for Gold Derby if it wasn't for the West Wing, and then we had a bit of a chat with him about how Jeff Daniels won his Emmy for the Newsroom, and that was pretty cool, so I got a selfie with him. Then I got a selfie with, a photo. Tom took the photo with Aaron. Very nice. Gave us the photo. Then he said, who else do you want to speak to? I'm like, Olivia Munn. We did an interview with her. It'd be great to touch base with her. Had a good chat with her and Tom. Then I got Tom to get a photo. And then as I was walking away from the photo, I said to her, that was great, that thing we were talking about in the interview. And then she continued the conversation and we chatted for another five or so minutes, just me and her, which was pretty cool. Mixing it up.
So you touch base? Or did you touch something else?
No. I put my arm around it for the photo. as far as we got, I'm pretty slow. I thought, I'll wait for another few Newsroom parties before going in for the ultimate. Then we had the predicament. Do we get a photo with Jeff Daniels? Do we go say hi to Jeff? He was eating. He was sitting down eating at the time. What do you think, John? Do you go and approach a celebrity while they're sitting down eating?
Oh. It depends what he's eating. Because, I mean, if he's sitting down, knife and fork, bowl of spaghetti, I mean, you know, that's not prime photo time. He's not ready for a photo. But if it's, if it's like a snack, he's maybe got like a cracker and cheese or something, you know, he can eat that pretty quickly and you're not interrupting any long-term eating.
Yeah, see, here's the weird thing about the party. Well, it wasn't like, it was sort of like a cocktail party, but they're also like sit-down tables. That was Mr. Daniels' table, and you could like get yourself a dinner and sit down with a dinner, and that sort of stage was that. I'm not sure, so it's sort of like that mid between like a fancy meal and like your cocktail sort of snacks, but I think it was knife and fork plate territory.
Maybe that's the conversation starter. Oh, hi, Mr. Daniels. How's the panini?
Yeah. I thought you were going to say the conversation starter is, oh, hi, Mr. Daniels. What celebrity eating photo etiquette?
That could work too.
Yeah, what do we do? We decided not to approach Jeff Daniels. We didn't want to bother him while he was having his dinner. Yeah.
Just take a photo of him eating messily and then sell it to TMZ.
Yeah. I also feel like it's a bit different. Like, if you're just at a restaurant and you see Jeff Daniels, you're like, what have I got to lose? Let's just go up and talk to him. When you're actually at a party you were invited to, you don't want to be the guest that they regretted inviting to the party. You know, like, I feel like if you're just out there, you know, he's gone out into public. This is a party. He's got, like, you don't want him to then turn to someone and go, who invited those guys? Like, what are they running?
Bloody Australians.
Like, They're acting like they're fans. Like, this isn't a fan function. This is a professional party. we'd go to the Newsroom Comic Con if I wanted to get bugged by fans while having dinner. So anyway. So there you go. That was the Newsroom Party stories. So this is a great, I think this is a good podcast. We talked heaps of HBO. We got stuck into Girls. We got stuck into Boardwalk and some Newsroom stories.
Yeah, and HBO has got a couple of new shows coming out, so I'm sure we'll have the chance to...
Oh! Which ones?
I don't know. They do. There's just word on the street.
It's my gotcha journalism, Jonathan. Caught you out.
I know. Well, there's one with The Rock. It's about, like... Ballers, oh, yeah. I think it's called.
Is that HBO? Okay.
I think so.
Yeah, probably. Like, I think I got an email about that.
So there you go.
Yeah, and obviously, Veep and Game of Thrones, two of our favourites, even though they're not new shows, are right in the thick of things at the moment on HBO.
Oh, yeah. I'm fairly up to date with Game of Thrones, so we'll definitely be doing that. And
yeah.
We'll have plenty of HBO goodness for you soon.
Oh, very good. And maybe a few movies coming up as well.
All right. Thanks for listening, guys. We hope you enjoyed the podcast. And as always,
see ya.
See you next week.
Bye.